The Open Door by Charlotte Riddell. Some people do not believe in ghosts. For that matter, some people do not believe in anything. There are persons who even affect incredulity concerning that open door at Ladlow Hall. They say it did not stand wide open, that they could have shut it, that the whole affair was a delusion, that they are sure it must have been a conspiracy, that they are doubtful whether there is such a place as Ladlow on the face of the earth, that the first time they are in Metershire, they will look it up. That is the manner in which this story has been greeted by my acquaintances. I am going to tell what happened to me exactly as it happened, and readers can credit or scoff at the tale as it pleases them. There was a time when I did not believe in ghosts either. If you had asked me one summer's morning years ago when you met me on London Bridge if I held such appearances to be probable or possible, you would have received an emphatic no for answer. But at this rate, the story of the open door will never be told. So we will, with your permission, plunge into it immediately. Sandy, what do you want? Should you like to earn a sovereign? Of course I should. A somewhat curt dialogue, but we were given to curtness in the offices of Messrs. Frimpton, Frampton and Fryer, auctioneers and estate agents, Sin Bennett's Hill City. My name is not Sandy or anything like it, but the other clerks so styled me because of a real or fancied likeness to some character, an ill-looking Scotchman they had seen at the theatre. It was no secret that I did not like the occupation of clerk in an auctioneer's office, and I did not like my employers. Still, it was a shock to me to find they entertained a most cordial antipathy to me. "Because," went on Parton, a fellow who delighted in chaffing me, "I can tell you how to lay hands on one."
"How?"
"You know that place we let to Kerrison, the tea dealer? He took it on a long lease, and he can't live in it. And our governor said this morning he wouldn't mind giving anybody who could find out what the deuce is the matter a couple of sovereigns and his traveling expenses."
"Where is the place?"
"Away down in Metershire, in the heart of the grazing country."
"And what is the matter?"
"A door that won't keep shut."
"What?"
"A door that will keep open, if you prefer that way of putting it."
"You are jesting."
"If I am, Kerrison is not, or Fryer either. Kerrison came here in a nice passion, and Fryer was in a fine rage. Kerrison went away to talk to his lawyer. Won't make much by that move, I fancy."
"But tell me why the door won't keep shut."
"They say the place is haunted."
"What nonsense!"
"Then you are just the person to take the ghost in hand. I thought so while old Fryer was speaking.
If the door won't keep shut, why can't they let it stay open?"
"I have not the slightest idea. I only know there are two sovereigns to be made, and that I give you a present of the information." And having thus spoken, Parton took down his hat and went out. There is one thing I can truly say about our office. We were never serious in it. We were always chaffing each other, playing practical jokes, telling stupid stories, scamping our work, looking at the clock, counting the hours to Saturday. For all that, we were all very earnest in our desire to have our salaries raised. I had £20 a year, which I was aware did not half provide for what I ate at home. And when new clothes were wanted, I always hated to mention the fact to my poor worried father. We had been better off once, I believe, though I never remember the time. My father owned a small property in the country, but owing to the failure of some bank, I never could understand what bank, it had to be mortgaged. Then the interest was not paid, and the mortgages foreclosed, and we had nothing left save the half pay of a major and about £100 a year which my mother brought to the common fund. We might have managed on our income, I think, but we were always trying to do something quite beyond our means, and consequently, creditors ruled us with rods of iron. It was all a great trial to my father, I think, who had to bear the brunt of the dunning and harass and internal shortness of money. It would have driven me crazy if I had not found a happy refuge at my aunt's. She was my father's sister, and had married so dreadfully below her that my mother refused to acknowledge the relationship at all. For these reasons and others, Parton's careless words about the two sovereigns stayed in my memory. I wanted money badly. I thought if I could earn 2 sovereigns, I might buy some trifles I needed for myself, and present my father with a new umbrella. Fancy is a dangerous little jade to flirt with, as I soon discovered. She led me on and on. When I recalled the amount of the rent Mr. Carrison agreed to pay for Ladlow Hall, I decided he would gladly give more than 2 sovereigns if he could only have the ghost turned out of possession. I fancied I might get 10 pounds, 20 pounds. I considered the matter all day, and I dreamed of it all night, and when I dressed myself next morning, I was determined to speak to Mr. Fryer on the subject. I did so. I told that gentleman that I should like to try whether I could not solve the mystery. I told him I had been accustomed to lonely houses, and that I should not feel at all nervous, that I did not believe in ghosts, and as for burglars, I was not afraid of them. "I don't mind your trying," he said at last. "Of course you understand it is no cure, no pay. Stay in the house for a week. If at the end of that time you can keep the door shut, locked, bolted, or nailed up, telegraph for me, and I will go down. If not, come back. If you like to take a companion, there is no objection." I thanked him, but I said I would rather not have a companion. "There is only one thing, sir, I should like." "And that?" "Is a little more money. If I lay the ghost, or find out the ghost, I think I ought to have more than 2 sovereigns.
"How much more do you think you ought to have?"
His tone quite threw me off my guard. It was so civil and conciliatory. "Well, if Mr. Carrison cannot now live in the place, perhaps he wouldn't mind giving me a 10-pound note. Mr. Fryer turned and opened one of the books lying on his desk.
"You have been with us how long, Edlid?"
11 months tomorrow.
"And our arrangement was, I think, quarterly payments and 1 month's notice on either side?"
"Yes, sir," I heard my voice tremble.
"Then you will please take your notice now. Come in before you leave this evening, and I'll pay you 3 months' salary, and then we shall be quits."
"I don't think I understand."
"But I understand, and that's enough. I have had enough of you and your airs and your indifference and your insolence here. I never had a clerk I disliked as I do you, coming and dictating terms, forsooth. No, you shan't go to Ladlow. Many a poor devil would have been glad to earn 1/2 guinea, let alone 2 sovereigns, and perhaps you may be before you are much older."
"Do you mean that you won't keep me here any longer, sir? I had no intention of offending you.
Now you need not say another word, for I won't bandy words with you. Since you have been in this place, you have never known your position, and you don't seem able to realize it. When I was foolish enough to take you, I did it on the strength of your connections. But I have never had a penny out of any one of your friends, if you have any. You'll not do any good in business for yourself or anybody else, and the sooner you go to Australia," here he was very emphatic, "and get off these premises, the better I shall be pleased."
I did not answer him, but I could not. He counted 5 pounds out of his cash-box, and, writing a receipt, pushed it and the money across the table, and bade me sign and be off at once. My hand trembled so I could scarcely hold the pen, but I had presence of mind enough left to return 1 month's pay I had, quite by the merest good fortune, in my waistcoat pocket. I can't take wages for work I haven't done. Good morning. And I left his office. I took from my desk the few articles belonging to me, and then, locking it, asked Parton if he would be so good to give the key to Mr. Fryer.
"What's up? Are you going?"
"Yes, I'm going."
"Got the sack?"
"That is exactly what has happened."
"Well, I'm damned."
I did not stop to hear any further, but bid my fellow clerks goodbye and shook the dust of Frimpton's estate and agency office from off my feet.